Hello everyone and welcome to another exciting episode of Alfi Next Gen Finance. I am Luigi Salerno. I am stepping in today as your host as Natalie has some personal commitments to attend to. Today we are diving into the dynamic world of entrepreneurship, exploring the journeys of two remarkable entrepreneurs, George Bock from Moneyflow and Felix Hemberling from CodeHive. George is a seasoned entrepreneur with years of experience navigating the highs and lows of building successful ventures. Felix is a bright young entrepreneur who is making waves with innovative ideas in the real estate sector. Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. Thanks.
So let's kick off with the first question, and it's a very simple one, and it's about your career. If you could summarize your career in more or less the length of a tweet, that would be awesome. Felix, you can start.
Yeah, so for me, it's sometimes a bit tricky to nuance where exactly my professional career started. But I'd say, for the past 7 to 8 years, I've been building businesses, ventures in a variety of industries. So everything from tech to private equity and finance, real estate and events. I actually got, I think, into the professional part of my life when I was starting to trade, which is related to Moneyflow as well. Not your app wasn't available at that time. But yeah, basically started trading in high school, then made it kind of my main occupation during university studies. And then basically during my second year of university studies, launched my first tech startup. And since then, didn't really leave the entrepreneurship ecosystem.
And George, can you tell us a bit about you?
Yes, as you might imagine, I hate routine. So I always look for new adventures. And if you compare it to climbing mountains, I have already climbed several mountains in my life and I won't stop. I had climbed several of the ones within KPMG. And my newest mountain to climb has the name of Moneyflow.
Moneyflow. Exactly. Thanks a lot. Now, I think meanings and semantics matter. So if you could please tell our audience what means to you being an entrepreneur, that would be also very nice. Could we start with you, Felix?
Yeah, I think, well, there's two parts to it. There's on the one hand, the kind of fundamentals that define being an entrepreneur or not being an entrepreneur. And then there's, a focus on my side as well on what doesn't define basically being an entrepreneur, right? Because I think there's sometimes misunderstandings about the art or the craft of entrepreneurship. So for me, an entrepreneur is really as simple as this. It's a person who's creating some added value for a certain group of people or certain parts of the world. And yeah, well, basically from scratch. So based on pure creativity, pure imagination. So really from truly nothing. And I think what doesn't define being an entrepreneur or not being an entrepreneur is really how you do it, right? Like how fast you do it, how big you scale this company or this business, how much in funding that you raise and so forth. Because again, like the florists or the carpenter next door are as much entrepreneurs as we, let's say, spreadsheet-obsessed tech entrepreneurs. I think that's an important nuance for me.
So George, you have a challenge now because that was a very nice definition. Okay, so what is yours?
So mine, I would say an entrepreneur is something that you are at heart. And an entrepreneur, as a matter of fact, is somebody that does not accept conditions around him, wants to change them to a better one. And of course, that's why entrepreneurs, you can find them in social, you can not only in business. And if we speak about a business entrepreneur, of course, the business entrepreneur is somebody that says, well, there is a problem in this world. I'm not happy with the solution that there is around right now. And my determination is to change that. And then is what they call always the good idea of the entrepreneur. The idea is how to solve the problem. What can I do better for sure? And how can I switch that? And I think that is really the attitude. The attitude makes the entrepreneur. You cannot really believe, I believe you cannot really learn to be an entrepreneur. You are or you are not. If you are, then do you let the passion go or do you want to contain the passion and you do not crystallize as an entrepreneur, then the second. And whether you are a good entrepreneur and a less good entrepreneur, that is something that you can learn. If you are an entrepreneur by heart, you can learn to be a good one or a less good one, for sure.
So it means that my next question makes no sense. Because the next one was about what took you to become an entrepreneur, but you have said clearly that you are or you are not. Now, maybe the question should be, when did you realize you were an entrepreneur?
Yeah, look, I think I've been entrepreneuring before I knew that it was an actual thing. So I think I was always interested in kind of letting off my energy or surplus of energy, kind of finding new things to craft, to create, whether that was, let's say, the Lego when I was younger, or going to a flea market and selling stuff I didn't need anymore, all the way to trading. Honestly, like it was kind of my first real, let's say, touch with doing stuff on my own, creating stuff on my own, and then up to the way where you just, let's say, go down that rabbit hole and you just find yourself in an ecosystem where you create stuff and create companies, meet people that you want to create those companies with. So I think for me it was really a natural progression. I've started in finance, did my internships in finance at asset management companies in Dublin, Luxembourg. So I didn't, let's say, pursue actively becoming an entrepreneur. It just kind of happened along the way.
It just happened. And what's your case?
For me, I think I understood hindsight best that is most probably what it is. I always got most challenged and most excited about doing something if somebody told me, well, that I believe that doesn't work. Then it was like, now I believe it works, and I will prove to you. I will can you let me take the challenge and prove to you that it can work? That was one thing. I mean, I could not really, of course, there are certain things. Certain things that are legally forbidden, you don't do them. But if there is a challenge there and somebody says, well, this doesn't work, and within the framework you can make it work, that's what it is. Then, funnily enough, I succeeded quite often in then making it work. It was not always a success, let's also be frank, but at least I could make it work. And some were big successes. And then where you realize maybe that you are an entrepreneur is that once you have done it and it works and it becomes a business, you are not interested anymore in it. Because now it works. It's routine. Like,
the exciting part is gone.
I can still prove it that I can climb that high mountain a second time. But the third time, the fourth time, it's not my interest. Show me another one. And I think then you all of a sudden realize maybe that's what I am, yes.
Okay.
I think if I just may add, you speak a lot about excitement. I think that's really what you need as an entrepreneur as well. Just as any other job, of course, not every day is sunshine and happy times. But it's really about that excitement and that drive to pursue that path and indeed work on something that most people think won't work. Just go for that, and you need that excitement to keep going.
If I can make a completion to prove of it, when I decided that it was important to make a break, well, I was pretty open on what is going to happen next. I could do more sport, playing more music, I don't know, making more travelings. I made a little bit of everything. Went again a little bit to school, back. But I finished again by creating a company.
Yes. Yes. And now that I am with you, George, you know, you are the seasoned entrepreneur here. So the question is about evolution. If you have seen any change in the landscape, not necessarily in Luxembourg, of course, but maybe, you know, in Europe or somewhere else.
Yeah, of course. And maybe because I narrow the question a little bit down and say, okay, let's speak a little bit financial. Financial, yes. Because of course, if you
yes, of course. Sorry. Yeah. I omitted the word finance industry.
No.
Yeah, that's right.
And while the finance industry in general is a very slow-moving, conservative industries, my feeling is there have already been dramatic changes, and there will by far more to come. And some dramatic changes are the following. I mean, when I look back 20 years, your bank would have given you a digital support, meaning would have let you open a computer, for sure not a mobile device, open a computer to do certain things. So that was the thing. And I can still remember when I had discussions with bankers at the time about what is to come, and that was around the 2010 years. Then they said, well, no, but banking is trust, is very important, it's human contact, the mobile devices, all this stuff, but they would never work. And I always told them, look, this is the new banking agency, showing the phone. That's where the bank is. It's not in your real estate. And the proof was already at the time, some years later, whenever you had to go to bank to sign a paper, you freak out. Because I want to do it at home. What the hell? I have to go to your place. What is this? So what changed from the digital support? It became a digital communication means. So you started to say, well, look, if you don't give me an easy way to speak to you, I'm not going to run with you. And now after COVID, and within COVID, there was an crystallization factor of the latest evolution, which is the digital relationship. You start an investor relationship, a banking relationship with somebody that you never have seen, and we'll most probably never seen. And you can see that even if I don't see him, everything works. The moment I have to see him, what the hell? This app is not working. It's not proper. It does not work. So I think we have just started to see this digitalization. And of course, we can speak, and later on, maybe we speak about technology in the back office. But the matter of fact, I think the biggest revolution that is now going to come is the digital relationship. And if, of course, there is not only one relationship, but if you don't manage the digital relationship with clients, you will not be on the game list. That is something I'm absolutely convinced. And that, of course, makes a complete different game. What are the two, three factors? Number one is I'm not anymore geographically linked for a business relationship. I mean, if my bank sits in Lithuania, I don't care. My bank sits here on my phone. I mean, it's there. It's perfect, fine. So it is like no geographic or other geographical limitation in the past. But also, if I can open a digital relationship, I might more inclined to have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 because it's not a big thing. I mean, it does not cost me a lot of efforts to open this relationship, which means that there will be by far more competition, and there has been by far more competition. The other big thing, which I also find, if you compare it a little bit for maybe Felix, it's a normal thing, but it's transparency. Transparency of information. I can remember the time where if you wanted to know what kind of interest rates are practiced by different banks, either you had a friend, or you had to go to the bank and say, show me your interest condition. When the guy, if he didn't have a relationship, he might not even have told you. So it was all a little bit, you had to run around to find something. And of course, arbitrage in a non-transparent environment is pretty easy. Well, today, information is everywhere. In the past, when a banker has given you education, he would have explained to you, well, look, the bonds, that's how they work. Well, so, oh yeah, good advice. Yeah, no, he has not even given you advice. He's given you education. Advice, that advice, you would even have paid as a customer for that advice. Today, I have this advice for free. I even challenge you if you tell me something. So the relationship has completely shifted away from I am the master of the information and I tell you to, well, let me challenge what you tell me. And by the way, what you tell me, 90% I already know. And that's, of course, it's a challenge for also a business relationship. I would leave the technical part a little bit out because I know you want to speak technology also. But I think that is definitely two major shifts. And also, when I look at that, I think, as well as when it comes to technology, and I'm going to repeat that at that moment, if we compare it to a lifetime of a human being, we are at age 12, 13. Huh? We are going to enter very soon puberty.
We're still teenagers. Pre-teenagers.
And then we will finish by adulthood. But there, on this development, we are really at the beginning. Mm-hmm.
If my mathematics are right, Felix, you have been already navigating the entrepreneurship world for about 10 years. And in those 10 years, have you seen any shift in the promotion of entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I think there's multiple levels to that. So I think the first thing in terms of promotion of entrepreneurship when I got started, I think that was still the pretty much the 24/7 relentless hustle culture, which was also a lot coming from the finance industry, and I've seen it a lot there. But I think no matter the age of the entrepreneur, I think that was more like kind of a systemic fundamental factor that was going on. So really those relentless hustle cultures, which were still pretty much praised by many entrepreneurs. And I think the biggest shift I've seen is indeed, in terms of the promotion of entrepreneurship, that what does it mean being an entrepreneur? How do you, let's say, take care of yourself as an entrepreneur has increased or has been enhanced dramatically. People are more aware about their mental health, their health in general. And I think that's definitely one big shift that I've seen, let's say, on the more personal side. On the, let's say, if you want to call it nation branding side of things, so really Luxembourg focused, for example, since that's where I launched most of my businesses. There's definitely been also substantial, significant evolutions over time in the promotion of entrepreneurship. And I think there's still a long way to go. I kind of have a love-hate relationship with that aspect. I think more and more people are becoming entrepreneurs. I think especially young ones, they have a different approach to being an entrepreneur as well. They really appreciate that flexibility, autonomy, they really appreciate that freedom entrepreneurship creates. They don't necessarily all chase big funding rounds and so forth, right? They just really want to, work on things that they're excited about. And that's definitely something I see. And then on the flip side, of course, you still have, let's say, a systemic problem, especially in Luxembourg, I think, with young people as well, especially kind of comparing the career that they could have at the government versus in the private sector. And if we want to admit it or not, it is purely based on salary gaps that exist.
So the Elon Musk type of entrepreneur is not longer fashionable. It's not what the world expects from an entrepreneur, because you said, work-life balance and also take care of yourself.
Yeah, I think as you progress in your entrepreneurship journey, you kind of start to realize that it's not fast cash or getting rich quick, right? Like it's really a long journey. And if I think about it now, the first company I created about 8 years ago, that's already quite a long time. And I'm far from, let's say, the ambitions that we have for all those companies that we launched. So it is a long journey. And I think you have to treat your health that same way, and your, let's say, relationship with being an entrepreneur, because at the end of the day, a true entrepreneur is an entrepreneur 24/7. You don't have working times. You think about your projects all the time, and you're excited about them in the best case. So you really have to be careful about not, let's say, getting down the negative rabbit hole of becoming, let's say, too much lost basically in those projects.
Thank you, Felix. George, challenges. Your first company, comparing, let's say, the first entrepreneurial project you launched with Moneyflow. Have you seen any change, any shift? Is there something new that you have faced lately?
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. I mean, there are practical things like barriers to entry for example, for ideas in the finance world have never been lower than today. And it comes, while regulation are still barriers, but the matter of fact that you can easily and safely set up an entire environment in clouds makes it easy. In the past, you had to build in a coffre-fort where you put your servers, because you deal with money and money is important and, of course, dangerous. Everybody wants to steal it and so on and so on. I mean, you have by far more access. And it's easier to access than some years ago. Now, I mean, the things have simply completely changed. And let me also take out one thing, and I do not want to sound old, but when I started to work, and you would have been a young person, and you would have said like, oh, I want to create a company, people would have looked and said, okay, what about first learning something? And then once you know how it works, then you can create a company. But then as you the moment you maybe then know how it works, you start to have a house, a family, and I don't know what, and say, okay, now I need the checks, and should I really do that? And then maybe you have said, like, maybe you have been an entrepreneur at heart, but now it was not possible anymore. That was when I was speaking. Some people were entrepreneurs at heart, but do they let go the passion, yes or no? So I think that is something at the time the ecosystem, as Felix also has lived it through, at the time was unthinkable. Maybe there was one Felix somewhere who said, well, I don't, you tell me first to get experience. No, I'm going to do this because I want to do this. And I really now speak 20 to 30 years ago. And today it's absolutely a normal thing. It's an encouraged thing. And as while in the past you say, learn first something and get experience and then you're entrepreneur, today you say, well, entrepreneurship is learning by experience. Okay, you want to create? Here we go. And of course, it's possible because the barriers are by far lower, and which is a good thing. And honestly, I find it fascinating. I enjoy all these people living their passions, because that's really what it is. It has to be, because stuff never changes. Is if you are not passionate about your stuff, don't even start. I had recently a discussion with in a session of sustainable investing with students, and they were speaking about what does it take to be an entrepreneur, and they said, make money. And I said, well, look, the entrepreneurs that just want to make money, they generally fail. The entrepreneurs that think they have something that they want to change, and they find out they are not the only people that think like that, they are going to bring a solution to a problem, serve society in an economic way. And I keep it always with Henry Ford that said, well, honestly, if you serve the society, if you serve the people, don't worry about the profit. You would be shy, because they would be immensely big, because the moment you help somebody, it's going to work out. So I think that is something that has never changed. And then the last thing that has never changed when you consider to be an entrepreneur, it is all about yourself and a team. And you have really be careful how you compose your team. And my principle is always try to work with people that are more intelligent than you. It always helps. If you play in a football team, you always want to play with Messi, you know, because the likelihood that you win is bigger. So that's the first thing. Second thing, hopefully you have identified a problem that is shared by a lot of people, meaning you have a good solution, hopefully, and you have a big market to act. And then, as Felix has said, and that's, I believe it's so true again, it's not a sprint, it's rather a marathon. The fact that we have 35 years of 35-year-old entrepreneurs is not because they have been quick. They have just started earlier than us. That's it.
Okay. Thanks, George. I will ask the unavoidable question, and it's about technology. And it's about, well, you know, Felix, your solution is technology based, basically. You were born with the technology in itself. So yeah, it's how you feel technology in all potential senses. I am not only saying digital. The technology has evolved dramatically lately. I mean, in the last, I would say, 5 years, 10 to 5 years. Has that also influenced the way entrepreneurs conceived entrepreneurship, or the way they go and invest, the way they go and do what they want to do?
Well, the very, very wide question. I think on the one hand, the technological changes, they also trigger the creation of some companies, right? And one example is Codehive. So with Codehive, basically what I did is, well, I purchased a property back in 2017, so a while ago. And at that time, well, I got a lot of paperwork. I was quite frustrated, let's say it bluntly, by the processes and the old school approaches, right? But in 2016, when I was in Singapore, I also onboarded N26 and one of the first neobanks purely digitally. Within 5 minutes, I had an account, a European account. I was a Luxembourg resident, but living at the time in Singapore. And it was, yeah, just a matter of 5 minutes. And just the question that popped up for me is, okay, on the one hand, we have those solutions and those technological evolutions have already taken place in some parts of the world and some industries. So why aren't those applied in other industries, right? So, and that's basically kind of the link we did with CodeDive. So we basically applied technologies that exist, that have worked in other industries, and applied them into the real estate space, which is lagging at least 5 to 10 years behind the finance and banking space in terms of digital transformation. So on the one hand, I think those technological changes can trigger the creation of other projects, businesses, companies, either completely new ones or indeed kind of replicates, but in other markets, right? Because there's a lot of sectors and markets to serve. And then on the other hand, of course, I think needless to say, technologies like AI, even though it's been around for a long time, I think the past 2-3 years, it's really been taken off on that, let's say, entrepreneur side. So indeed, entrepreneurs that structure their teams differently. I think there's a lot of things that you can do in order to substitute various parts of your teams and various tasks, but even up to various positions. So yeah, definitely changes the way entrepreneurs operate, the way they set up their companies. They are able to be even more frugal, more lean. In my opinion, definitely those personal and professional assistants that come with AI are definitely of value.
So Felix mentioned AI, and I thought AI and AI powered robot advisors. So it's your turn, George.
Absolutely. So technology, and for sure, again, technology has already played an important role in certain industries. It has lagged slightly behind, I believe, in financial industry, and we are right now seeing the whole thing unlocking. Why did technology lag behind in financial systems? Because every new technology needs regulatory approval, and that takes time. So that does not mean that it does not happen, but it will happen with a delay if you compare to other things. If you see other things happening around you, and it does not yet happen in financial services, just wait for the regulator to prove it, and then here we go, the gates are open. So, and then that is something that we can, and I'll prove that to you in a certain things. We had four prior COVID, and there was a lot about, for example, if you look at regulators were caring a lot about premises being very safe. Home working was not really something which was supposed to be safe. Look at the landscape as we have it today. Cloud computing was the exception. Well, now cloud computing gets more and more to the rule. A lot of applications are going to run. And for example, of course, if you start from a green field, for example, like in our experience, I do not buy any more a server. That's out of question. I go directly to the cloud. The entire environment runs in the cloud, which makes it even possible for me to be at a high level of technology without a huge fixed cost behind. So you see this enabling factor that is important. And this enabling factor will also make that entrepreneurship in fintech, in regtech, is by far easier than it has ever been. So this is this enabling function. Then something which is also close to my heart and where we made a big step forward as a company is that I don't know whether you know that we are the first real digital custodian in Luxembourg for end users. So all our custody records get organized through encryption into the blockchain. So we use this blockchain infrastructure. And Larry Fink has also recently invested in blockchain, but not necessarily in Bitcoin, not in cryptocurrency, but in blockchain technology as an infrastructure for capital markets, but not only for capital markets. I believe that this technology will make us the next shift. We have right now the World Wide Web, a lot of information in there, nothing verified. It's up to you to find out whether it's right or wrong, but it's a public register of information which is unverified. We are going to start in the future. We are on the first steps to creating the World Wide Web for confirmed information. Because it's information where everybody agrees that it is right. And if somebody says it's not right, it will not appear. So for the very first time, we have a register of confirmed information. And so we will also have a register, the possibility to make a public register of values of ownership of value. Whoever has a value will be registered. We have started now. If you own a usage on our platform, nobody knows your code, but you will know that it is exists in on the blockchain. And so I think this is going to be, for sure, it's everything that has not to be centralized anymore, because right now we have centralized clearing system, we have centralized custody system. Everything that does not need that anymore, because there's also a huge cost linked to that, will be decentralized. We, you know, DeFi, what is it? What does not need to be centralized? We should maybe not centralize it. It gives more agility, it's cheaper, and in time, it's even safer because it is less attackable through this too big to fail. Because now it is spread everywhere. So this is going to be a major change. And so it is going to be a major change because it's going to be safer, or it is safer, it is cheaper. A registration in the blockchain costs, we use the Stellar blockchain, 0.0009 cents. I mean, this is a binding record before court. So you cannot do better. And that's why also it's going to come, because it's cheap, affordable, and it's safe, and it will allow people to have another kind of access. And you could give clients access to other margins, to other prices. And then last but not least, I just want to say a thing about artificial intelligence. I think everything is cool around this word. The only thing, it's intelligence. The thing is not intelligent. I mean, it's just...
It's artificial.
It's big data models. But absolutely right. I think, of course, this will also change completely the industry. But I mean, if you look how long we took to give blockchain a start, I think from a regulatory perspective, to have the artificial advisor in regulated MiFID processes, that will still take a time. And it's, of course, a very interesting but not uncomplicated question. So for sure, for me, the technology driver is one of the enablers. It has no value for financial services per se, but it makes everything happen. And if you look at how much of automatization and technology sits in a car, and you compare that to the actual status of the industry, and if it all comes with a delay, you see where we go, okay?
Okay, George, thank you. I think we can talk the entire day about entrepreneurship. It's super interesting. I have one question for you, Felix. It's about how professionals collaborate and connect in today's entrepreneurship world. So, you know, you are the young entrepreneur. Is any way you connect, you sit down and you have a coffee, you talk through an app? How do you do that? Is there such a thing?
Yeah, I think in terms of collaboration, networking, it's something I personally, on a lot of levels, feel is overrated, or at least the way it's been done traditionally. I don't agree with that approach. So basically, I mean, now for me, networking, collaborating is not going on events, meeting a lot of people I don't know, without agenda, without real next steps, let's say, without something pragmatic and concrete. While it might be useful in some cases, right? I'm not saying you should never attend an event where you don't know people, but let's say the pragmatic approach of collaborating, networking with other entrepreneurs, especially your potential customers, prospects, partners, and so forth, for me is indeed really being on one-on-ones, planning a call, planning a meeting that can be a physical meeting, can be a coffee chat, can be a call on Google Meet. But yeah, for me, that's really the way I network those past few years. I also know that sometimes you have to make an appearance, especially if you're the CEO of a company. You kind of have to mingle among people and kind of show your face. Customers want to see that as well. Partners want to see that. And again, it's the best promotion of for your company. But yeah, my relationship there is also quite... let's say mixed, kind of also love hate. I thrive most when I work on the product that we actually want to build. And if I want to collaborate, network, I do it usually on a one-on-one, connect via an app indeed.
It has to be meaningful.
In person. Exactly. And for me, it's... sometimes I get nervous when I don't have an agenda for a meeting. You know, like I'm not going into a meeting without knowing what is this meeting about, right? Like it's just the way I am in that regard. Yeah, but again, like it it can be very accelerating. I enjoy a lot talking with peer entrepreneurs, customers, partners of ours, and really getting advice as well. Doesn't mean that you have to take every advice, right? But sharing ideas and sharing thoughts in at some stages can really, really help and be an accelerating factor.
And we got a final, it's actually not a question, but it's more an advice you could give to the next generation of entrepreneurs. So the floor is yours. Feel free to get inspired by this talk and give a nice, advice. Maybe George, you can start as the season one.
Yeah. So what is interesting is if you look on what has already all been covered in the world, you could say, well, like, yes, I want to be an entrepreneur, but what the hell should I do? Everything is there. It sounds like
everything has been done already.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, somebody had created Microsoft, another guy had made Apple, so now we have two things. That's good enough for the rest of us, apparently. And somebody
George created Moneyflow.
Somebody already made Facebook. Like, I cannot make Facebook. Like, oh, what? For me?
Yeah.
What is still left? And I think... That is definitely something you should take out of your mind. And of course, a lot of things exist, but the world is constantly evolving, and there are constantly new opportunities because there's new technology. And we spoke about some of the very new ones, but still everything to come. So there's plenty of things to invent. And I think, like, we from that perspective, as to the advice to give, number one, I really honor that there is more encouragement for younger people to go right ahead for it. And I would say, number one, if you feel like an entrepreneur, dare to be entrepreneur, just let it out and give it a start. That's point number one. The point number two is while we have very fast machines, our brain is still pretty much old-fashioned, and that is also something we have to accept. We should never say, well, if we have now the artificial intelligence devices, we are as good as them. No, we have to admit that we are still a little bit in the old game. That means, as I said earlier on, when you do something, really check it out properly. Test your idea with a lot of different people. So really to not be isolated, maybe the most important element of collaborating for an entrepreneur test, have friends that where you can test. And then make sure that you get the right team together. For me, it's still key, because you might start with an idea and end up with something completely different, because through the journey you will learn. And the most important thing is that team brings you to that journey. That team stays with you together when it hits hard. And it will hit hard. And that's the moment where comes the other thing. Any entrepreneur, there are very few that consider it was an easy journey. It gets really, there are moments where you want to stop. Because you say, like, and hopefully you have the team behind, which gives you also power to say to continue. Think, make it a good team, and then don't be naive. There will be hard moments, and the difference is the ones that continue and the ones that stop. And as long as it makes sense, continue. It's not because it's difficult that you shall not do it. You do it because it is difficult.
That was super, super nice. Felix, it's your turn.
Yeah, I think I'll link to especially the team aspect, or in a wider sense, just be conscious about who you surround yourself with. I think that's really important, especially at a young age. It will influence whether you go to university or not, or whether it is okay not to go to university, for example. Like, that, those are kind of the questions that a lot of young people have to ask themselves, right? And I think when I was at the end of my high school studies, was still normal that everyone had to go to university, and just having a bachelor degree wasn't that brilliant, right? Like, you at least have to have a master's degree and so forth, right? So that's kind of that stigma that you have to deal with and break as an entrepreneur if you really want to go for it. Because again, like, university will be there, like, that's an institution, will be there in 20 years, 30 years, but this one opportunity might be a once in a lifetime opportunity, and it's that's for real. So definitely the surrounding. getting advice, or at least seeking advice, kind of sharing thoughts, sharing problems that you face, doesn't mean that you have to take all the advice that you get, but at least being open to the advice, because it's really important as well who you take the advice from and what you do with this advice, right? Because your journey is your individual journey. It's different. There's a lot of similarities between your journey and other journeys, or other entrepreneurs' journeys. But yeah, in the end of the day, it's your journey that counts. I would end it with saying that it's really important that you don't care as much about what other people say, what other people think. If you have an idea, if you're excited about it, that's the most important aspect. You have to feel that passion, live that passion, and be excited about what you're building, because otherwise it's not worth the struggles that you will face, as George said. There's going to be a lot of tough times, and if there's no passion, no excitement for it in the bigger picture, not every day again is a fantastic day, but you need to have that passion, and then basically be blind towards the criticism, the negative feedback, right? Not the good negative feedback, but just the negative feedback that's not helping you progress.
So thank you both. I have truly, truly enjoyed this talk. Wish you all a nice day, and until the next episode. This is Finance Next Gen from Alfie.
Thank you. Likewise. Thanks.